Hi, everyone. What we're going to be doing is learning 3.5 halachos from the Rambam that will give us an insight into an understanding into the holiday of Hanukkah. A very, very powerful, meaningful insight. And the analysis we're going to use in our explanation of the Rambam, which you have in front of you on the web, you'll have a text there with the shiur. The analysis comes from shiurim that Rabbi Soloveitchik gave over the years. In fact, these shiurim were written up and published in Mesorah Chelek Dalet, the fourth of the Mesorah journals here at the OU. We're going to dig right into the Rambam because it's a fascinating, fascinating topic. Why? First of all, there's only two places in the whole Mishneh Torah that the Rambam gives us a history. As you know, when the Rambam in his introduction to the Mishneh Torah says that, why is it called Mishneh Torah? That with the Torah Shebichsav, the Tanakh, having this, the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Mishneh Torah, gives someone, so to speak, the complete basis of Judaism, of our theology. So when it comes to other holidays, for instance, Purim, you don't need the story. The Rambam doesn't have to give us a story because it's right there in Megillas Esther. So too, when it comes to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, that mitzvah of telling over the Exodus and studying and learning about it, the text is there in the Tanakh. That's not so with Hanukkah. Hanukkah took place somewhere between, the war actually probably was started around somewhere around 165, 163 before the Common Era. And it took place way after there was, so to speak, a Chasimas HaTanakh. And therefore, we don't have the story of Hanukkah in the Tanakh. The Rambam has to tell us the story. Because after all, as we're going to see, the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neros and saying Hallel, the verbal Hallel that we say every morning of Hanukkah, the lighting of the candles every night, what are we being mefarsim? What are we publicizing? What miracle, what story, what events are we publicizing? And that, of course, is why the Rambam has to give us a story. Parenthetically, that's part of the reason that we say Haneros Halalu in when we light the candles. Haneros Halalu is something that was given to us by the Gaonim, because what does it do? It demonstrates and it explains that we know what we're publicizing, what miracle we're being megala mefarsing. Let's start. Now, what's very interesting is it starts paragimel. That's the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah. Why did the Rambam do that? Because the whole basis of the rabbis, the whole legal basis of setting up, instituting, days where you say halal, days where you light candles, what right do they have to do that? Isn't that Baal Tosif? Isn't that adding a holiday or a religious experience onto that which God gave us in the Torah? In the legal precedent for engaging in this type of activity is Purim, is Megillas Esther and what we call holiday. And I don't mean that in a halachic sense, the day of Purim. So it's Hilchos Megillah v'Chanukah. Why is it Megillah v'Chanukah, not Purim v'Chanukah? Because it's the whole discussion at the end of Megillas Esther that gave the Sanhedrin the right, the license, legally, to institute days, what's called Kviyas Hayom, not Kedushas Hayom. A day having sanctity is only something that God can give us. That's only something that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us. That's why when Mordechai and Esther wanted to be established the day of Purim is a Yom Tov, that was rejected by the Chachmei HaMasorah. But Kviyas HaYom, as opposed to Kedushas HaYom, a day which is designated on the calendar for engaging in certain activities, in this case Hallel and Neros, that's something that they can do, and that whole basis of what we call Chanukah is rooted in the Purim. It's rooted in the analysis from the Megillah. So Chanukah is a continuation of Purim in terms of its nature. What is it? What's the basis? The famous verse, according to the Rambam in Parshas Veschanan, that what do? We demonstrate the principle that kimi goy gadol. Where is there a nation that has Hashem krovim elav, that has a God that is close to it? Chol koreinu elav, that whenever we communicate sincerely, whenever the Jewish people engage in tshuva and we relate to God, there's something called hashkacha pratis. And what is the notion of the candles in the halal on Chanukah? It's demonstrating this principle, that God, through providence, through history and through specific providence, responded to the Jews in our time of need. So let's read. Halacha Aleph. B'bayis sheni kishmalche Yavan gazru gzeros al Yisrael. It was during the Second Commonwealth. Why? What is Malche Yavan? It was the Greco-Syrians. It was the Syrian government based in Damascus. As you know, after Alexander the Great died, either he was poisoned by one of his generals or he choked on his tongue in an epileptic fit. No one man could control the whole Greek empire. And what happened was the empire really divided up into three. There's a Greco-Egyptian empire that was based in Alexandria during the breakup under Ptolemy, known as the Ptolemaean emperors. That part of the empire actually controlled the Jewish people originally. Then there's the Seleucidian Empire. Seleucid was a general of Alexander. That's the Damascene or the Greco-Syrian Empire. And that part of the Greek Empire, that empire, is what we're talking about. Why the Rav said it's called Malchei Yavan when it really wasn't Yavan. It wasn't that part of the empire that was southern Europe, that was the northern part of the Mediterranean. It was really the Greco-Syrians based in Damascus, because their philosophy, the Hellenistic philosophy that they led their lives by, that they perpetrated or that they tried to espouse upon others, was rooted, started in what? Was rooted in the philosophy of Greece. And that's why they're called Malchei Yavan. So Gazu Gzeros, they made these religious decrees because they couldn't get the Jews in terms of the mainstream Jewish community, they couldn't convince the mainstream Jewish community to become Hellenistic. So what did they do? They essentially prohibited those fundamental principles of Judaism that enabled Judaism to be observed. The observance of the Shabbos, Bris Milah, that defined a Jew as a Jew. They prohibited that. Jewish education. We all know when there's no Jewish education, that's the end of the Jewish people. That's the whole idea of the dreidel. The dreidel was a subterfuge, that if a Hellenistic Jew would walk by, they couldn't report them to the Greco-Syrian authorities because there was a subterfuge of spinning the dreidel. Today we have a different subterfuge. We have the Gemara and the Chumash on the table and the deck of cards, or we have the Blackberry underneath the table. In their day they were teaching and the subterfuge was a dreidel. What else? By the way, the Haftarah, according to the Avud Dorim, when they prohibited Jewish education, the Haftorah was something that they instituted at that time. They went to the Greco-Syrians and said, this isn't Jewish education. In fact, Ein Navi Roshay L'Chadesh Davar. The prophets can't teach Jewish law. All they are is words of inspiration and acting ethically and morally. And what they did was, by the fact that they got that in between the laws, between the legislation, that was not didn't fall under the rubric of the Gzeira of Jewish education, they were able to do what? To continue the theme of the Parsha each and every week through the Haftorah. You know that the Beis HaMikdash was the central institution, the national central institution. They took it over. They put up tzalamim, images in there. They were metame. They took all the sanctity out of the Beis HaMikdash. They actually broke through the chil, partsubo pratzos. They broke through in 13 different places that barrier on the Temple Mount that created a separation between Gentile and Jew. Gentiles are welcome. They can bring a korban nedava to the Beis HaMikdash, a voluntary offering. They can come up to the Temple Mount, but there's a certain place where a Gentile can only go so far. In fact, we have a piece of the chil after it was rebuilt by the Chashmonaim and reestablished. It's in three languages. We have it in the Turkish Museum. It's in Aramaic, it's in Greek, and it's in Latin, saying that until this point, Gentiles can come no further. So they broke through that boundary. So the Mikdash, Bris Milah, Shabbos, Jewish education, and of course the Jewish calendar. If you prohibit the lunar calendar, what happens? There's no Rosh Hashanah, no Yom Kippur, no Pesach. Imagine Judaism and experiencing life as a Jew without those essential Jewish holidays that shape and define the essential philosophical principles that the holidays represent. Gazu Gzeiros al Yisrael, ubatlu datam. Not only did they make these decrees, but they tried to essentially destroy Judaism. This was not a war against the Jews. This was a war against the Jewish religion, against Judaism. They didn't allow us to learn, to engage in the theory. They didn't allow us to practice, as we mentioned, the examples of the Gzeros. But not only that, upashtu yadam bimamonam uvivnosehem. What did they do? They extended by force. The Greco-Syrian proconsuls, the Greco-Syrian governors and ruling authorities, on the night of the marriage, what would they do? They would take the Jewish virgin bride, that's bivnoteim, the Jewish daughters. They would take the Jewish bride, virgin bride, and sleep with her before she could be with her husband. They expropriated our assets, our funds. This was not just a war, so to speak, of philosophy. Yes, they despised and they couldn't tolerate Jewish philosophy and Jewish value system. But you should know one thing, very much like the Nazis, it wasn't just philosophical. The members of the SS were these brutes. They were these primitive thugs who used their power to engage in criminal activities. And it was no different with the Greco-Syrian soldiers, with the Greco-Syrian authorities. That's Pashtu Yadam Bivnosehem Uvimamonam. And then it continues. V'nichnasu laheichal. They actually enter the heichal, that part of the Beis HaMikdash that has a roof, that has a building. Only the Kohanim can enter there. Upartzu bo pratzos v'timo ataros. They were metame everything. They set up idols there. So they tried to undermine and destroy all the foundations of our theology. The point is they made Judaism an untenable religion to observe. They prohibited us. They made it untenable and impossible for us to observe our theology. And here's the key line. Vitzar lahem liYisrael me'od mipneihem. The oppression became so great to the Jewish people as a function of the Greco-Syrian oppression. Why does the Rambam use that term? That term you'll find in Parakeh of Hilchos Malachim. That is the license, that is the matir, or the license, to engage in war. Something becomes a milchemes mitzvah if it's a war against the seven Canaanite nations, against Amalek, or if our enemies are oppressing us to such a point where we're in a state of dire straits. Vitzar lahem. It's dire straits. You can't exist. And that's what happened. The Chashmonaim were not just a group of bandits. They were not just these bravado, macho Jewish men. They actually sat. These were teachers. These were educators. These were members of the Sanhedrin. And they weighed. They knew full well if they would engage in a defensive war, in a guerrilla war to defend the Jewish people, to defend the Jewish religion, what would happen? Jews would die, Gentiles would die, Syrians would die, Jews would die. They knew what they were doing had serious, serious magnitude. And what did? They sat and they weighed and they made a decision that literally the survival of Judaism was at stake. The survival of the theology was at stake, and they poskened. They made a decision that they must go to war. That Judaism it's worth dying for. Judaism, the theology, is worth giving our lives for. It's worth risking the lives of others to save the theology. And that's what the Rambam is reflecting. This was done with careful deliberation. This was weighed. This was analyzed. And they had not only the right to do this, they had an obligation. The Rambam would deem it as a milchemes mitzvah by using that terminology. It was an obligatory war. The lachatzum lachatz gadol. Ad sherichem aleim elokei avosenu v'hoshiyam miyadam. Till what? Through the tshuva, through the prayers, through the sincerity, God had compassion upon us, the God of our fathers. And as we wasn't just our God, but we related to the God of the Masorah, of everything that he gave to us that we wanted to stand up and live our lives according to. And God saved us. He saved us from their power. V'hitzilam. Hoshiyam v'hitzilam. Hoshiyah is just survival. We were able to survive as a function of the victory of this war. V'hitzilam. And he saved us and we were able to breathe. Like Ana Hashem Hoshiyana, Ana Hashem Hatzlichana, we say in Halal, right? Basic survival and the ability to do more than survive. V'gavru b'nei Chashmonai HaKohanim HaGedolim. And the children, the family of the Kohanim Gedolim, the group that we call the Chashmonaim, they were successful. V'haragum, and they defeated the Greco-Syrians. V'hoshiyu Yisrael miyadam, and they saved the Jewish people. Now, by the way, what we don't say publicly is this wasn't just a war against the Greco-Syrians. Who was on the side of the Greco-Syrians? The Hellenistic Jews. It was as much a civil war as it was against the Greco-Syrians. And we were successful. The ma'at, the few, were successful, defeated the many. What happened? The Hamidu, part of that salvation was the Hamidu Melech Mina Kohanim, that they established a Jewish government, a government from this family of Kohanim, the Chazar Malchus Yisrael, Yeser Al Masayim Shanim Ad HaChorban HaSheni. And what? As a function of establishing a Jewish government and Jewish leadership over the Jewish people, we were able to, that was part of the salvation. You know, the Ramban you're familiar with from Lo Yasor Shevet Mi Yehuda, that famous verse, in the brachos in Parshas Vayechi, the Ramban comments there in those brachos, Lo Yasor Shevet Mi Yehuda, he says that this was a terrible mistake that they made. It was a great salvation. They should have taken over, handed over the government to someone from Yehuda, a Davidic descendant from the Malchus Beis David. And that way you have the famous division of powers, the institution of division of powers, the Torah instituted. You have an executive branch that comes from Shevet Yehuda, from the descendants of David. You have the educational branch, the Kohanim. And you have what? The legislative hyphen judicial branch, the Sanhedrin. The fact is, Kohanim are not only members of the educational branch, many of them also make up part of the Sanhedrin, the legislative judicial branch. For them to as well be involved in the executive, that's terrible. That's a violation of the division of powers. You can't have too much power in the hands of too few. And the Ramban says as a function of them seizing power and continuing in power, ultimately, not only did they lose the power, as you know, Antipater and Hordus, they defeated the last of the Chashmonai leadership. But what? they eventually eradicated, wiped out any living descendant of the Hashmonaim. And the Ramban sees the hand of Hashgacha here. They tried to control and seize power, and they did. And as a function of that, they were removed, they were taken away, so that no one group of Jews should ever have too much control or too much power. The Rambam here says just the opposite. He says part of the salvation was the Hamidu Lahem Melech Min HaKohanim, that they took over the government. Because after all, these were the educators, these were the leaders. If they would take over the government, at least in the short run, at least in the first number of years or maybe the first decade, by them doing this, what would happen? At least they could reestablish Jewish education. They could reestablish the Shabbos. They could reestablish the observance of circumcision. The Kohanim are the ones who are responsible for the Beis HaMikdash, the very central institution of the Jewish people, the central educational institution. They could reestablish it, enable it to function in the way that it could be. Judaism could survive. So the Rambam views, unlike the Ramban, at least the first generation, he views it as part of the salvation. Yes, the Rambam would agree that down the road it was time to pass over and hand over the power to the descendants of King David. But initially, that was part of the great salvation. Not only that they led the revolt, and that they were the ones that were the tour de force behind the revolt, spiritually, educationally, and otherwise, but they also were the ones who led the reestablishment of Jewish governance and reestablishment of the freedom of religion that the Greco-Syrians prevented us from having. Halacha base. Ukeshagavur Yisrael aloivehem, when we succeeded over our enemies, and it's very interesting, it keeps using them, the enemies, you know, etc., without spelling out who it is, because who were part of the enemies? It wasn't just the Greco-Syrians, it was their fellow Jews, Nebuch, it was Jew against Jew in this battle. The Ibadum, they destroyed them, Bechafhei Bechodesh Bekislev. There was respite when? On the 25th of the month of Kislev. V'nichnesu lahechal, and they come into the hechal, v'lo matzu shem and tor, b'mikdash elapach echad. All they find is one vessel of oil. That's all the only vessel that hasn't been contaminated. V'lo hayabo lahadlik ele yom echad bilvad. All there was enough to light the menorah. They set up a menorah. They were going to be mechanech, you know, reestablish the whole institution of menorah. There was only enough for one day. V'liku mimenu neiros hamaracha shmonesh yamim. And what happened from that one little vessel didn't just last that night, that winter night of the 25th of Kislev, but it actually lasted 8 whole days, achikichu zeisim votziu shemen tahor. Until what? They could go and produce shemen zayizach, they could produce new tahor oil. So this was the miracle. This miracle that took place within the heichal, within the enclosed part of the Beis HaMikdash that only the Kohanim could go to, this was a simon, this was reflected back upon what? It reflected back upon the war. See, the way the New York Times would have described this war is, they cared more about their, it's like the Vietnamese against the American troops. And what happened? They knew the terrain better, and they cared for the land more, and they were more passionate about it, and the Americans didn't want to be in Southeast Asia. You could make all kinds of explanations as to why America lost. There was no unity. The Americans themselves were questioning, what are we doing there? You could have used that analogy as to why the Jews defeated the Greco-Syrians. That's not the way, theologically, that's not the way we read history. This was a miraculous military victory. Yes, we cared more for the land. And yes, we were fighting for our survival and the survival of our tradition and the survival of everything that we cherished. But you know what? The fact that the miracle took place, defying the laws of physics in the Beis HaMikdash and the Heichal, that was Megala. That reflected back upon what? That the battles over the previous months and years were what? Were also miraculous. They also defied the laws. And this was God's hand, the hand of God, the hand of God, so to speak, shaping and defining history. Umipnei ze halacha gimel. Hiskinu chachamim shabosa dor shayu shmonis yamim ha'ilu shtchilasin chafhei bekislev yamei simcha v'halel. They instituted that these days would be days of simcha and halel. The halel is what? The halel in the morning and the praise through action at night. Right? The publicizing of the miracle through praising God for it. What is yamei simcha? So many of us understand that the Yimei Simcha is a deprivation of fasting, a deprivation of hespedim, a deprivation of mourning. In other words, it's not through the positive, but through a deprivation of things that bring upon sadness. That's Yimei Simcha. Those 8 days of miracle are commemorated in those two manifestations. Umadlikin behen haneros be'erev al pischei habatim. And what do? We light at the entrance to our homes. So everyone who sees, who walks by the house, sees this publication of the miracle. B'chol laila v'laila, each and every night, mishmonas halelus of the 8 days, laharos u'lagalos hanes. Number one is to demonstrate. By the whole idea of the menorah, right, is demonstrating that the miracle took place vis-a-vis the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash. And number two is legalos, is we're revealing, we're publicizing. Very interesting, because the other two times you have a mitzvah persumei nisa by Megillas Esther, which is done to the Jewish community, the reading of the Megillah, and the Seder, which is publicizing the miracles of our emancipation and the birth of our nation, Seder night, they're done internally. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik used to say, why is this done externally? We're not just publicizing it to ourselves, to the family, or to the community. We're publicizing it to the world. What does the Gemara say, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik used to quote? Who are the regal minashuk? The tardumoi. The tardumoi were Gentiles. They were wick makers. So that the last people leaving the marketplace could make it home. They made very good wicks that would last and would be sturdy and strong and withstand the wind so they could find their way home in a dark night. So the point is that the lighting of the menorah, or the lighting of the neros, so to speak, is something that we're demonstrating to the world. Why? Because survival, which was the case with the story of Purim, that's animals have a survival instinct. Everyone has a need to survive. But the notion that we would give our lives, that we would risk our very survival for our theology, for our value system, for our principles, for the system of the Torah, that not everyone would do. And that we dafka publicize to the world. Laharos, to demonstrate it through candles like the menorah. That's why many achronim say the preferable shemen zayisach, to use oil, like oil was used in menorah. And legalos, and to reveal and to publicize the nature of the providence, the nature of God's salvation of the Jewish people. The yamim Eloheinu nikroin Chanukah, we call these days Chanukah, v'heinu asurin, as we said, behesped v'tanis kimei ha-purim. Now you see, like they're prohibited in fasting, in hespedim, in eulogies that bring about sorrow and tears, just like the days of Purim. Vadlakas haneros behen mitzvah medivrei sofim kikriyas ha-megillah. Second time we equate it to Purim. And the lighting of the candles is a mitzvah just like there's a mitzvah to read the Megillah. Halacha dalet, kol shechayev bekriyas ha-megillah, chayev badlakas ner Chanukah. What does that mean? Three times the Rambam has equated this to Purim. Because the whole, as we said in our introduction, the whole legal basis, the whole license, the matir, that the Sanhedrin had, the Basin of the Chashmonaim a year later, of introducing this, of legislating this, of instituting, putting a bracha, making it a halachic obligation for every Jew, what's the basis of that? The basis of that, legally, is the principles that we learned by Megillah, by the Purim holiday. Just like they had a right to demonstrate and to publicize the hand of Hashgacha, that when the Jewish people engage in sincere tshuva and communicate to God, are sincere, that there's a system called specific providence, Hashgacha Pratis, so too here by Chanukah. So just to review, and we're going to wrap it up at this point, the Rambam, we've read the first 3.5 halachas of Perek Gimel. What the Rambam did was, he gave us an insight into the nature of the tzara and into the nature of the salvation, and how we go about publicizing and demonstrating to the world our gratitude to God, but demonstrating to the world that when the Jewish people call out to God, communicate to God in a sincere way, that God acts through the system of Hashgacha Pratis, not just through general providence, the laws of science, but specific providence. And he reacted here, both vis-a-vis the military war that enabled our survival, and that we have till this day religious freedom, that everything that we've given to the world and everything that we cherish has survived. And likewise, we demonstrate that through the act of the Hallel, through the act of the candles. I want to wish everyone a good, meaningful Chanukah. You have the text in front of you. We went very quickly and very briefly through it, but it gives us an insight into what we're observing, into what we're demonstrating, and into what we really stand for and what we cherish, that we're willing to give our lives, that this is the most precious thing that we, the Jewish people, have, the system of the Torah. Thank you.